That'll probably actually cool it better.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That works.
Coffee got honey later.
Okay, 6:30, I'm going to call the meeting to order. The roll call. Supervisor Carroll is running late, but he will be there. I think we'll.
Let's say minutes.
What's that?
Who's doing the minutes?
We have the.
We got the recorder on here.
Oh, okay.
So I'll just call Supervisor Belsky.
Here.
Supervisor Thomas.
Here.
Supervisor Stocker.
Here.
Supervisor O'Day.
Here.
Supervisor Stott.
Here.
Chairman's here.
Franco.
What's that? Oh, Franco, what? No.
I'm not a.
No, you're not. That was a test.
Yeah, we're just Supervisor Carroll. He will be here. As I said, he's just running late. So the first thing on our agenda then will be citizens' comments. Are there any citizens who would like to comment tonight? Are there any citizens who'd like to comment? Seeing no citizens who'd like to comment, citizens' comments are closed. And we'll go to approval of minutes of previous meetings. So moved by Supervisor Thomas.
Second.
Second by, is that O'Day? Okay. Supervisor O'Day. All those youth governance, they vote on the minutes?
Aye.
Okay. Rest of the committee on the minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Chairman comments or supervisor comments or youth governance comments. I don't have anything that's not going to be covered in the meeting itself. Youth and governance, do you have any comments or questions? Any of the supervisors, including Supervisor Franco? Anybody? Nothing yet? Supervisor Stein?
Sorry, I was thinking what I wanted to say. Is this a good place to ask, request something for the next agenda?
Good place as any.
Okay. There was a report of the University of Wisconsin Extension in the Kenosha County, along with in the Kenosha County and the Kenosha County. The public library put on a program, NEA's Pathways and Purpose for the Future. I'd just like to get somebody to come in and talk to us about that, what that's about. There's some concern, getting some feedback on that. We'd like to just get their side of the story,
okay,
if possible.
Okay. Did you get that, Sean? Any other supervisor comments? Seeing none? Comments are closed. We'll go right to our division reports. Start off with Frank Cardinale with our facilities. Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two quick updates. We finally got the KCAP security modifications. Those two panels replaced. They looked beautiful and warranties and came in under budget. And just one other update for the Kemper Water Infiltration Repairs Phase 3 that we just sent out the bid. We're going to be getting the bid back on February 14th. We submitted for a $70,000 city CDBG grant, and we'll find out on February 7th if we get it and how much we'll get.
What was the city?
It's Charlie Delta. B as in Bravo Golf Grant.
Okay.
Actually, Matt will probably track me. There we go.
Okay. And 10127. What, if anything, or what, how much it would be at that point? And that's specifically not for the water infiltration of the county.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Any supervisors have any questions? Yeah. Supervisor Stock?
Are there some qualifications or requirements to get the grant that we have to do?
There are, actually. Matt's probably.
Yes, so there's several different categories. This is a federal grant through HUD, and most municipalities, being the city of Kenosha being one, they create a committee to determine, based on these categories, how to distribute those funds that are allocated based on census data within that municipality. Ours fits more into the building envelope side, and there's a pool of money for that. I don't have the dollar amount of how much is available for the 2023 calendar year, but there's also things for programming, community aid and development, nonprofits, as far as infrastructure development. different categories based on who applies. We don't know year to year and how that ranks. So we go through the process. We act as interviewer, interviewee between the city and the county. And then after they hear everyone as far as their request, there's a following meeting that Frank spoke of to figure out how much, if it's going to be the full grant, partial grant. Sometimes they reduce it if there's a large, robust amount of applicants applying for it year to year.
I guess my question is more along, is there social environment requirements that are associated with the grant?
There's different yes and no. They do ask for demographic information. They want to know the utilization of the facility, programming we put in as part of that requirement. So Kemper Center Inc. acts on our behalf with a lot of those programming, being that there's youth programs, there's art camps, they go to local schools for field trips to Durkee Mansion. So we put a lot of demographic and utilization within our application as well.
Is there a place I can go to view those requirements?
I could send you a copy of that.
Okay, that'd be awesome. That'd save me a lot of questions.
Do you want that to
the committee?
Okay,
yeah,
you got
to the committee. Thank you. Supervisor Thompson.
Yeah, just a question, because I'm ignorant to this. What is the Bristol Radio Tower? What purpose is that serving?
The Bristol Radio Tower is the tower right back in here. You'll see the lights on when you leave. If you look back in the back of the highway department, it's about 300 feet tall. What that serves is it serves the sheriff's department has two channels, and county fire has a channel, and mutual aid, if they have an event that's too big for Kenosha County to handle, they can ask for aid from other communities. The generator there is 30 years old. It's at the end of its life. It's a backup generator. And and it's starting to have a couple issues. So that's part of the kind of just the replacement of the infrastructure.
That leads right into my other question. Because we have another generator on this one, and we got the generator at Brookside. Is there like a listing on how many backup generators we have? Does it count?
Actually, Matt has a complete list of all of them.
Can get you that list.
Is there going to be like double digits? I'm just curious.
Yeah,
like every time we talk about something, there's another generator.
One per tower, so probably five, and then the five main campuses, so probably around 10. Yeah, off the top of my head.
And that includes for collections and all the other kind of stuff.
Correct. Two, KCDC has two.
Are they all coming due this year? I'm just saying, because it seems like
due in the last year.
They were pushed off a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, are they all getting close to having to be, are they right at the end of the line on the lot? You don't have to let me know right this section. I'm just curious, because we're going to spend about $2 million on generators just this year with the installation.
Yeah. Frank, do we have a kind of a plan on replacing those? So yeah, maybe that's something Supervisor Thomas may want to see.
I'm just curious what those forward to in the coming years.
I have a list of all the generators and the expected end of life.
That's just a curiosity, so we know you're going to get.
We'll do.
But that's all I had. Oh, go ahead.
You're right, because a lot of the buildings were built about, you know, 30 years ago or so. The KCDC, KCDC a little newer, but this was about that time. The radio tower was done at the same time, so you're right. Some of them are coming through.
We're all going to have to bite the bullet. I did have one more thing thinking about that. And I don't know if anyone here is on that. I'm sure you are on the planning for the new, we'll say, job center or whatever it's going to be called. I was having a conversation with someone else last week. Is there a way to build into this on the front end instead of having to tear everything up again in a couple of years to put charging stations in? Maybe do it in conjunction with Unified, because they will probably have some of the same requirements.
You're talking about charging for a car?
Yes.
Vehicle charging stations.
Because they're going to have to tear up this whole parking lot. Kenosha Unified is right there. They might be getting the same requirements to have electric vehicles for whatever. I know we probably will at some point. And if we can put it in on the front end instead of tearing it all up again, that would be a beautiful thing.
So we can look into what it would take and what infrastructure would be needed.
I don't think we need a bunch.
We can certainly ask that question.
Yeah. So just a thought. Yeah. Okay.
And could you send the report to this committee?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. The report's sent to the whole committee.
Just on that, too. I remember I'd gotten one from you, Matt, on after we went through the tours last year, and I remember seeing a report for all the HVAC systems and where they were at with their end of life. Were the generators in that? I don't remember.
No, it's a separate list.
Okay. But it would be a similar layout, because that was really helpful to kind of see what we were overdue on, what was on track and not.
Yep.
Okay.
To your point about the chargers, when we did the parking lots just west of KCAD, when we did the first parking lot, and we got that property, and then we did the second parking lot, and we got that property, we actually ran conduit and everything to the islands in anticipation of future charging stations for that project.
Very good. I just know there were more requirements on the electrical side, on the infrastructure to carry the load and the batteries you need and all the other kind of stuff.
So it looks like the culverts on KD started this week. Is that what it is?
That one started.
So it's projected to be about 1 week time that it's going to be shut down, the KD?
Yep.
Okay. Now, I think we're also slated to redo that road this year, too. Do we have a time frame when that's going to? I have people asking now that they've seen the road close. I said, no, they're not redoing the road right now.
We do. It is on the list.
Do you have an approximate time?
Exactly.
I'm not looking for date to date, just July, August, whatever. You
know. We do have a schedule that we put together with all the different roads that are supposed to be done this year. So I can send that to them.
I'd appreciate it if you send it to the committee, because I know last year Supervisor Stock had asked for all of the projects that were going on. And it'd be nice to have that with the projected dates. Obviously, we know we're at the mercy of the weather.
Yeah, we actually do have that together.
Okay. I thought you would, and I thought maybe we'd want to at least see it from the committee's standpoint. If there's any questions. Then we're also going to be doing some culverts on Highway C, but that won't be a complete shutdown.
So for Highway C, one will be a complete shutdown. There's two on C.
There's two on C, okay.
Yeah, so one will be a shutdown, one is just based off of the location.
And I saw flags going up off of the, and I don't know if it was just to notice people that, hey, there's a curve here.
Yeah.
But I saw the red and the orange flags, and I didn't know if that was starting. We're not starting that. I know it's soon.
So that was in relation to an MSR that I received.
Okay.
That sign got knocked down.
Oh, okay.
And so
you wanted to flag it so they could see it easier to knock it down the next time.
Just to draw attention to it.
Okay, so, but we'll get more notification when that starts to.
Yes.
Okay, as you probably know, C is a major east-west thoroughway for Twin Lakes, Randall, Salem, and all that. So when you send the notices out, they are going, I'm assuming they're going to municipalities as well.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so they get sent out.
Okay. And then the Highway W, Highway C improvement program, it looked like, I don't know if Paul, did you put this up or if Clement did.
Yeah.
The 7th of February would be another public information meeting. Do we have that confirmed yet?
I believe that is confirmed, yes.
And time and location, and we're going to be talking. Are we going door to door with flyers? Are we letting Randall know as well so we can get it all done here?
Yeah, so we usually do like an outreach. We usually do copies, and then
I think Clement said he could have done a better job
from
the last
first one.
Yeah, from the first one. So
okay,
I guess I'm asking to do a better job.
Gotcha. Okay, I'll make those of it.
Okay, I appreciate it. And I think he was supposed to include Randall. Residents in the area too. They're a little bit further west, but at least the town of Randall.
Okay.
To inform them that they're going to have it, and then I guess how we would normally notice it as well too.
Right.
As well.
Okay.
It doesn't affect them as much. Supervisor Bellson.
Director Billingsley, are we coordinating Highway K with the city since the Potawatomi have now purchased that huge parcel? The Dairyland parcel, the Potawatomi purchased that.
Menominee is across the interstate.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Potawatomi is building residential, is my understanding.
Yes, so. we are with the development in the old dairy land area. Yes. So I know Clement has been in conversations with the city of Kenosha.
Okay.
And the developer in that area.
Okay, because I know that the timeline might vary a little bit. So, and then for Menominee on the other side of the interstate, we're only going to 118th, correct?
The MOU requires us to go to 128th.
128th, because I think that 40-acre parcel is further away. So I wonder if we're going to be tapped for that should that go through. So
we can look at that.
Okay. All right. That's just down the road. Thank you.
Just a curiosity question. Again, I'm ignorant to the roundabout world. So we've got a roundabout in Summers going on. It's the cost of it's like over $3 million. Is that a typical cost for a roundabout?
Yeah, roundabouts get pretty pricey, yeah.
So is that, do we get any offsetting costs to offset the cost from the state or federal money to
convert that? I'm going to have to check the funding source for this. I don't believe so. Yeah, I think this is all social money.
All right, so this would be, I guess, my final question. How do we determine if that's a good investment of $3 million? What are the boxes we have to check to determine as far as accidents, how much traffic flow?
Yep.
So before, and I'm assuming it's already a four-way stop.
Yeah, so before a roundabout is considered, there's an actual evaluation that evaluates all the different intersection controls, including a roundabout, signal, and how much benefit-cost ratio, you know, with the accidents and all that.
I know that's my district, and there's been deadly accidents at that intersection.
Yeah.
Deadly, not just accidents.
Yeah. I was just curious, because I'm assuming this, a fair portion of this is buying the property around it.
Yep.
I would guess.
Yeah.
Right. So I was just like, all right, that would be it. Thanks.
Supervisor Stock.
A few months ago, I talked about Highway 50 and 31. And the approach there was out of sync in height, and that's been really nicely corrected. I just want to appreciate that.
What do you think, Shelly, for that?
I think it's the state, but it was through this communication that was brought to light.
Okay. Any other questions? Let me get this right, Carol. Oh.
We have money coming back budgeted to receive $1,432,000 for that roundabout.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Welcome.
Do you have a question?
No, yeah, one question. So I see that there's this public information meeting for the Highway W, but we also talked early end of last week about the public information meeting for Highway EM.
Yeah.
Just wanted to notify everybody. Is that set for the 20th now, or?
That is, yeah. We're working on the notice right now. We're hoping to get it out by the 6th.
Okay.
But we're definitely hoping for the 20th, because you have that board meeting on the 20th.
Right.
Yeah.
It's coupled up with the village board meeting on the 20th, so it's just before the village board meeting.
So you're going to be at the village, though?
Okay. It's going to be at the village.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just going to be before the next meeting that we have here. So.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Frank.
Yeah, just to follow up on Highway K, phase two, roughly from 94th Court to about 118th or 115th, whatever it is, just shy of the highway. When is that proposed to begin? Any idea?
Yeah, so we're designing this year, starting this year. We still have to work on real estate and all that yet, so.
It is in the CIP, the schedule.
Yeah.
It's in the CIP.
Yeah,
we're tracking it right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
This year, I think,
2024.
So
this
year. Completely,
well,
right?
That, there's phase three, too.
Yes.
So we're talking about phase two. This year's, Andy.
Are they all three in your district, John?
Most
of them?
Yeah, it borders my district, so.
Yeah.
So design this year, yeah.
Okay.
But as far as construction...
Jim, this is the second time you've had to look this up.
I'm just waiting for a chance to talk. I can answer the question.
Go ahead. Okay.
This year's design.
Yeah.
Next year, there's sub-construction. And then the year after that, there's more construction. So there's construction in 24 and 25. And it's a very... Phase 2 is a very expensive project. According to the long-range plan, it's $13.3 million, but we get about $8 million back in... is that STP money? I don't know. Is that CMAQ, but it's some kind of funding.
So it's just design for Phase 2 this year.
This year, $200,000 for design for Phase 2.
Well, it's STP funds. Supervisor Carroll?
Another question, seeing as we're talking about money. Just a question. On the highway EM budget, I see that obviously bids came in over budget. There was a question at the village meeting about the $985,000 from the local road improvement program, and they were just wondering if that is that just a flat fee, or was that a percentage of the overall cost of the project? Or if
that's cost went up, that amount doesn't go up.
Okay, I thought that was the answer, but I wanted to go to the source and.
But we would gladly take more money from the municipalities out there should they could find it in their hearts to contribute more to the project that benefits them.
Well. There are a tremendous amount of residents along...
No, that number doesn't change.
Yeah. There are a tremendous amount of lake residents along that project that are over $1 million houses that contribute nicely to the county and the village budget.
Yes, they do. They don't even live there full time. Any other question on highways? Thank you, Bonner. All right. And now we're looking at facilities with Matt Storino. Matt?
No updates on the report. I know it's been slow moving on these three projects. We finally got a little bit of movement here starting at the first of the year, but nothing new from the report. If there's any questions.
Okay. Any questions for Matt?
A question, Mark. Comparing the budgets for the backup generator for Brookside compared to these 10 towers you're talking about, what is the ballpark price is different?
Well, the scope of work is significantly different. Yeah. The size of generator comparable, I think.
So you're not talking millions of dollars for these other 10-minute generators?
It's just the one generator for the tower. And yeah. Frank's been working on that one as far as...
What kind of ballpark number are you looking at?
$100,000.
Okay, $100,000. Right.
It's a small one.
Just for comparison purposes, okay.
Yeah, quite a bit smaller.
Okay. All right. Questions. Thank you, Matt.
I have one. This is your report, right? The Ventures Memorial Restaurant Pavilion. Is this on yours or is that on?
That's
the other one. Okay, my bad.
Right.
Wrong, Matt.
Yeah. Do my best to answer it.
Floor is yours.
Take the answer you want to hear. Okay, we're going to then head over to golf with Dan. Dan, do you have anything to add or?
As far as my report goes, I know my report is as written, thank you, but as far as the golf rates go, we've done a lot of research and put together a plan, and really our first rate increase since 2008, really. We did increase some golf cart fees back in 10, and we've added some tax since then, but this really, the rate structure hasn't changed too much since then, and we feel that with the rising cost of everything and with the projects that we're putting together, we put together a good proposal on our golf rates that we think will meet the requirements of making that extra $300,000 a year to cover the loan that we need for those irrigation and renovation projects. So I don't know if anybody has any specific questions on any of the rates, but you were sent a proposal in the packet, and happy to answer anything that you might have.
Do you have any questions for Dan?
So how does this, what is this compared to other local courses as far as these new pricing structures?
Can we get them? I put that together.
Oh.
I was going to They are, go ahead, Dan, I'll let you.
Yeah, like, how do we compare to other ones with these? Are we closer to the competition?
Yes, you know, I guess overall, you know, we have a couple of high-end golf courses in our comparisons, like the Lake Geneva area, Hawksview and Grand Geneva are close enough, but if you take those two out, we're slightly elevated from all the averages, but there's some golf courses in here that either are going out of business or you know, that don't have the same type of facilities that we have, you know, are not quite up to the same facilities that we offer. So yes, we're competitive within a couple dollars, both weekdays and weekends. You know, like weekdays with cart for 9 holes, we're 6 cents above the average. For our 18 holes, we're $2.73 above the average. Weekends, we're $1.56 above the average for 9 holes, and $3.80 above for 18 holes. So we are one of the only ones that offer GPS in the area, and one of the main increases in our rates were... GPS is a global positioning system right on the carts, so it gives you exact position on the golf course, and it gives you distances to the front, the middle, and the back of the greens. So it's a really nice advantage. We did it for the convenience of our guests, plus it's a really nice monitoring tool for the golf shop. We can see where everybody is on the golf course, and we can see if pace of play is going correctly. And everybody has just raved about having it since we put it in last spring. So, and you know, we're just really trying to become, you know, competitive with our golf cart rates. I mean, most courses charge around $20 for golf carts for 18, and that's what we're proposing, and $12 for 9. You know, and so that's where most of our increases are going to be coming from, is those golf carts.
Any questions?
Supervisor Hobbs.
Is there any type of an annual membership?
Yes, in the packet that was proposed, we call it our value golfer package, because they're buying bulk golf really up front, and so they're buying the value. Yes, those are going up. Also, we're trying to target like 35 rounds. Yeah, this passes right here. Yeah.
We're trying to target. I just wanted to make sure I understood it.
About 35 rounds. If you do 35 rounds at our peak rate, you know, that would come out. And a lot of our golfers, I mean, I know golfers that have to play over 200 times. And there's a pretty significant change for some of our passes there. We had a senior pass last year that required you to pay $5 every single time, and now it's all included in that package. So that package did go up a little bit more than the others, but it also eliminates that $5. Plus, the big thing that we think that will satisfy our guests is did not include leagues last year, but now if you're a league member and you're a league player and you play weekly, that'll also be included in that senior package. So I think that's really going to be a nice package for our seniors. And we've had a lot of requests for senior packages with cart. And we have yearly cart passes, which for seniors we discounted, so they can have a yearly pass that they can play really unlimited golf weekdays for $12.95. So we feel that that's a good compromise.
Play Brightdale or at Best?
All 63 holes. Yep.
63 holes.
Yep.
How many senior passes do we sell in a year?
About 120. 115.
And what about the value golfer passes?
Jim, you got that number? Andy.
It's about the same. The adult value rider was 92 last year.
Okay. So it was 92 or 92,000?
92.
92
passes. In our season passes, we total, you know, value is about $350,000 of revenue for us out of our 4 million.
So do they run on a calendar year or like a season year, like prorated? Like they start in July, it goes to the next July, or
it's
fully?
Just for the calendar year.
The one back in 2018 when I was first elected to the board or put on Public Works, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out why the capital improvements on the golf courses are being paid for by the county residents when they should be paid for by the golfers, in my opinion. So that's how all the private ones work, private that are publicly run. So they found a way to do it. And we knew we had to increase rates some, but like you said, these rates haven't gone up since 2008.
Right.
Just look at inflation last year, look what X cost this year. So I think everyone's kind of expecting that the rates will probably go up anyway with the other golf courses as well. So I know we'll be voting on this, and I just wanted to make sure that others understood kind of how this evolved over time.
One other thing I'd like to just point out, and you might get some feedback on it, our senior age is going from 55 to 60. And, you know, I just feel that, you know, most places are 62 or still less than that senior age. So, you know, I feel it was done prior to my arrival in 2009 just to get the courses more busy and bring you know, those people here. But I feel that, you know, 60 years is really a fair age. It's still less than many of the other courses that are on our comparison. So.
On that, are you grandfathering in the people that have been buying the passes annually since?
If they have had the pass, yes, we will.
Okay.
Yep.
And then a couple other questions. The 5.5 sales tax, is that something new, or is that you're just stating that it's on top of?
Just stating that, yeah.
Okay. And then is there anything keeping us? I know we ran into an issue over in parks for charging out of, I think it was for the beach passes, charging out-of-state residents significantly more, but is there a reason why we don't have an out-of-state rate? Is that something that you guys have explored?
And again, you know, we feel that, you know, we provide great value at the golf courses. You know, we feel that, you know, it's a fine facility for everybody to come to. So, you know, we haven't included any out-of-state increases for our facilities. Again,
do we have a significant number of out-of-state players? I'm just curious.
I would say yes. I would say 40 to 50%, you know, especially on the weekends. We get you know, a lot of Illinois people coming up to play. Mm-hmm. Weekdays it's a much more local demographics.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay. Any questions?
Just in support, I think what's being offered for the cost that's being presented is a good value.
Anybody else?
Amor, Kevin. I would agree. I think the rate should be comparable to the other courses, and I know that you've taken great care of the courses and you've been doing a lot of improvements. So I think that the cost should, you know, the golfers should see the value that they're getting with the improvements in the courses that you've been making. Just a couple questions on the rates here. I see that on the Monday, the top line there, Monday through Friday, you know, everything kind of is bumped up a couple bucks. But the 2003 proposed for the 18 holes is still at $26. Is there, you know, kind of just what's the methodology behind that, just leaving that alone?
Weekdays are where we want to target our golfers. We're really busy on the weekends, sometimes during the week, until that league period at 3 o'clock, you know, it's when we need additional players. Plus with the $4 increase in the cart fees, it went from, and 83% of our golfers ride, so it went from, this year, $42 to $46, so there's going to be a $4 increase in 18 holes riding on the weekdays too.
Okay. Well, that seems to make sense. You've got capacity there, so you're like, you want to attract people to that time slot,
right?
Essentially. Okay. I think that was all that I had. Oh, I guess the other question is, you talked about $350,000 being your rough revenue for memberships,
season
or whatever.
Season passes,
sure. By raising the rates here, and I guess season passes and then also, you know, weekly rates and stuff, about how much do you think you're going to generate on an annual basis, roughly?
Well, if we could generate from that section, you know, another 10 to 15% is what we're looking for. You know, we want our season pass holders. We want, you know, that consistent play. We want that, you know, base that, you know, we have people there coming all the time. So, yeah, you know, that was our target. If we can target that, you know, I think that would be a good number for us.
Okay. And I'm sure the folks that have come there, you know, you're able to, I guess, sell the increases because of the improvements that you've been doing and the proposed improvements as well. Is that, yeah, is that the idea?
Well, the biggest one that I think we might get any feedback on is the senior pass. And when we offer the leagues that they're able to play in leagues also, I think that's really going to sell them, you know, and they don't have to shell out that $5 every single time. So, you know, actually some of the seniors are going to be playing for less. And our goal is to keep it very affordable for junior and senior golfers, you know, and so that without, you know, when those guys are, you know, playing 200 rounds, they're shelling out another $1,000 in that $5 fee. So, you know, I think it'll be received with some consternation from some, but I think that most people will benefit from that, having that rate.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the idea is now that, you know, Dan can run the golf course, set the rates that they need to do the things that he wants to do in a time when he wants to do it. They're still going to have to come to the board. They're still going to have to get approved. But, you know, it's not dependent now on the CIP. It's going to be dependent on them financing themselves through their rates. And I think they've done a really good job on putting them together, making it affordable, you know, for those who make it affordable, and still not being, you know, you're not at a private golf course rate, you know, you're not a merit club or something like that, you know, very affordable. And
I'd like to make a motion then.
Sure.
To approve the 2023 golf season rates as documented.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Belsky, second by Supervisor Stocker. Any more discussion? Okay. Youth and Governance, how would you vote on the increase?
Aye.
And the rest of the board, rest of the committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. All right. Now we get to Matt with Parks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have nothing additional than what was in my report.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for Matt?
It's not a question, but I just saw through there that they can pay for their dog passes with the credit card.
Yeah.
Here would be my thought. Is there a way to put a Venmo QR code?
Yes, we do have a QR code at the Apple site on the fee booth. So before you even pick up the envelope, it'll be right there. And then they'll have the website for people that aren't familiar with the QR code. And then we have temporary banners. And we'll replace those once we finish design with permanent signage that has QR code and that website where you can go and pay for your fees right there at the dock.
So here would be a thought to expand that. When people launch their boat at Veterans Park, or by Veterans Park, or at any other park, and say, hey, we had a really good time here. We're a visitor. We'd like to make a donation. You know, somehow just make it look like that. I think that would be, I mean, people come from all over the place to use these parks, and there's some outstanding features at our parks. I mean, if I'm using it for free, I'm happy to donate. I'm just saying, especially if I'm out of state. So if there's a way to justify the cost of signs and putting it up, all that kind of stuff.
That's a great idea, and we have that in the back of our minds. We didn't want to start small and test this out, but now that we have a platform behind the scenes that's very flexible for us to do these QR codes, that's our hope and anticipation that if we work out the kinks, make sure this is working right, yes, there's a donation button, even with the dog parks, that you can donate additional if you want. So that's right on that platform.
Can you earmark it?
Yeah, we do that with our accounting at your market because all revenue goes directly back to those dog parks. It has to pay for the dog park.
But no, I'm just saying like in the other areas.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, very cool.
And Supervisor Belsky.
I have two things I wanted to comment on. The Silver Lake Park RFP, Kenosha Public Market would be happy to share our vendor list for potential vendors for the your RFP so that you can send it out. And then secondly, a little concern about Old Settlers Park band shelter. I mean, a lot of people are very excited about this band shelter. I'm concerned about construction and how that's going to impact like a grand opening, because isn't the Highway 50 construction supposed to be happening at the same time? So maybe we need to do a little alternate, you know, how people can get through off the 60th through, and just so that it's not a cluster.
Absolutely. Yeah, we know that we knew for years that Highway 50 was going to have this reconstruction. Unfortunately, it's just coming in parallel paths for this year. So we do want to offer a concert series just to work the kinks out with this one as well. So, yeah, is it going to be the best during the construction season? It really depends on how they sequence it and what activities are happening right in front of the park, because it's a larger stretch. But we still don't want to leave the band shelter in its first year being not utilized. So it'll be kind of that PR marketing, making sure people know it's hopefully 1 year of construction. Right? Okay.
I think it's all
right. Then we'll be okay.
Yeah. I think it's I think everybody on this committee or the board too, you know, get the word out. Let's help make sure that this is successful, because it is a big deal.
Thank you.
That's all.
Any others?
I had a couple.
Yeah. The which where would it go? The Veterans Memorial Park. What was the? I know you gave us a little bit of information last meeting about the concrete, and they were going to do a study and figure out what was wrong, if it was. So can you just update on that? What was the conclusion of that?
Absolutely. So we did a pretty rigorous back and forth between Kamoa Z, our general contractor. We did consult with Wish Jenny. They're a third-party consultant that specializes in concrete after it's been cured. So we brought them out, and long story short is these bug holes are pretty normal, but it's not up to our expectation, especially with something at a Veterans Plaza to have all these little pockets and voids of air voids on the aesthetics. We did discover through a core sample that there's no structural deficiencies with the building, so that's good. We checked that box. And it's more so how to get that aesthetic value that we both had agreeables on based on the front end specification and the bidding and all that good stuff. And Kamozi still wanted to have that product with their name on it be something high value. So using this consultant service, they recommended a specific product that it's not you smear it on there, it's more so filling the voids, rubbing it off as clean as possible to still have that rough sawn timber look to the building using that form liner that presses against the concrete as it cures. So once that's removed, we fill the bug holes. It's called a Tome CT40 product. We're going to fill that in, or the contractor will fill that in spring. You have to be above 40 degrees in order to have that concrete-based product fill those voids. After that cures, Kamozi will be sealing the building. And once you seal it, that will help make that more watertight, but then you have to stay on top of it indefinitely. So we've been negotiating with the contractor, hoping to finalize those conversations based on the report recommendations, to get everything in writing, have agreeables, so we won't miss a beat going into spring construction season by having that issue resolved. Moving forward, we have six total shelters down below that use the same type of aesthetic value of that rough sawn timber concrete look. So the contractor is going to be doing a couple new mock-up samples based on more realistic construction methodology, including rebar and everything else that you would do to form these walls to have a more acceptable and agreeable product for these samples moving forward. Because the first one they did, and they agreed upon it, they didn't use the same means and methods from their sample to what they did out in the field. They want to know what they're getting themselves into as much as we do. So we hit the pause button. We'll be reevaluating a new mock-up this spring to make sure that there's a level of acceptance for those air voids and pockets, because concrete is concrete, and there's only a couple of guarantees, as we say, about concrete, and that, you know, you're going to have cracks over time, but you want to minimize as far as those aesthetics So we're going to go through that process again with Camosi this spring.
So they don't have a root cause as to what caused that, other fact that concrete.
I can tell you, my eye is keen to bug holes now more than I ever thought it would be. Going to the Milwaukee Art Museum, they're everywhere on the inside. And it's just something I never noticed until you're responsible for that aesthetic with your project. Then you see those things. We went downtown in the historic Pabst Brewery area. Brand new construction project on a historic building on a staircase. Bug holes everywhere. Brand new building. So it's like, how do you leave it that way though? So I'm happy that we're all on the same page as far as the level of acceptance, that we're just not going to walk away and leave it that way. But I almost feel like, especially with Camosi, it's a third generation contractor, that we're all learning from this, which is surprising that no one's really figured out how to create that aesthetic value that we're all trying to get out of this product. So they're going to learn a little something, we're going to learn something, and then we can incorporate that with the other five shelters as we move forward. So it stinks that it happened, but I think we're at a good place with the contractor to fix these issues aesthetically and have it baked into our actual specifications in the future.
I see where some companies, well, not companies, but some businesses have an artist come and draw like fake pictures of bugs going in the hole. It's all
plan B. It's plan B.
Yeah. I hope that's plan B.
So does this happen more on stuff that's concrete that's going vertical?
Yes, absolutely.
And not so much horizontal. So is there a way to do it in a horizontal? How they put up all these warehouse buildings?
The precast. So we did talk about that early during our meeting, that maybe we need to change out how we construct them. So not to get too technical, but when you do your I'm already halfway there, so so when you cast like the foundation, you do your four foundation pour, you usually have rebar stick through there, then you have another slab on top of that for your wall foundation, then you go up in there. So it's the means of design basis where I'm getting at is how you do your rebar in order to secure from your foundation to go to your next pour. You need to make up your choice early on, and we didn't do that. We did a pour in place type of design. If you do precast, you have to do things differently in order to secure your foundation, because it's very difficult to put a precast wall on something that's already there with your footings, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So another issue is how you do that rough sawn timber. They can't do all sides when they do precast. Usually you use the bottom. That's where the weight is to compact that. That's where your design is. But if you ever look at a precast on the other side, same thing with bug holes. So you only have one good side, even with the precast. Our design is all four sides that we want looking pretty good.
I've just seen people that do the woodwork sidewalks. And it looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Without the bug holes.
Right.
Sidewalks. So it's horizontal, the vertical, if it makes a difference.
Well, what's different about the sidewalks is that they do the form after the concrete's poured, versus in the wall, you're forming it into the forms.
Right. No, that's why I asked the question.
So,
I mean, I can see where it's more prone to get air in the system.
Right.
It's not like it's a bad gimmick.
And they do vibrate, and they do have their technique to try to get those.
And the concrete's going to make it a little complicated. And that dye, we call it a dye of that casting, because you've repeated it, so it gets. It's only perfect the very first time.
Just out of curiosity, even with all the complications surrounding it, is it still more economical to build them this way as opposed to like the brick ones at Pets Park? Or is that, did you guys consider those different options when you were planning these out?
Yeah, I would say that we didn't factor this part as far as the technical. We knew it would be a little bit more technical than, yeah, if you use more of your block, cement block, and then you had some sort of veneer with that type of brick material. Yes, that would probably be somewhat more economical, but it's the basis of design of what we aesthetically want for that area. So when we first start this with consultants and designers, master plans, we always look at that aesthetic value, the functionality, and also the maintenance long term. The nice thing about concrete like this is it's usually typically low maintenance for a long extended period of time. Now, yes, we have to seal it every 5 years now that we have the situation. But all in all, between tuck pointing issues like in Frank's report or other things, nothing, zero maintenance. But this design was kind of more leaning towards low maintenance costs on this one. So that was also part of it, long range planning.
And then
And then, yeah, I just want to say thanks again for getting them. I'm going to have to go over there and look at it now. I really was excited to see the online payment for the dog tags. That was really nice that we can do that now. I also got the notification about the lettering machine, the apparel. Just an idea. Maybe you want to have some park-themed apparel in the future. I know I'm familiar with this, with the company. I know it's like no cost to you to change the design. You just give them a new logo, and right. They can print something up on the fly. So maybe just some ideas, park-themed apparel, maybe a dog park themed, Kenosha dog parks, tapping at those guys.
Teaser for spring, I'll just tell you that. We're on top of it.
So, yeah, that would be cool to see.
Teaser, you're wrong.
That's true.
I didn't see the report for the Bristol Woods Parks Trail. I don't know if I missed that. Right. For the ADA. It says see attached report. I didn't remember seeing it in my packet, so I wasn't sure if it got missed.
I could just mention about that. Are you talking about the ADA and the wheelchair?
Yeah.
We're pretty darn close. So I met with Warren, the president for Pringle Nature Center. They did their test run with the wheelchair. And the Accessibility Wisconsin is a nonprofit organization that gives out to different communities. They're on board. They're ready to go. I actually sent some documents over to John Moyer because we just want from an administrative side our liability coverage and all that good stuff and the waiver form. So we're really on the home stretch of getting those final documents for the people to agree to those terms. And we're good to go. So I'm hoping by early spring we'll have that wheelchair over at Bristol Woods Park.
That's awesome, because it was only a couple weeks ago that this came up, so that's awesome that we're this far along.
But they'll be able to pay for it the same way they can pay for anything else, then, too?
I don't think there's a fee for it.
Oh, okay.
I think it's just first come, first serve.
Okay. Check it out.
Right. You know, I was just going to add, it was out there a couple weeks ago, and it took a tour of the trails up there. I could see the caterpillar tracks from it.
They're not concerned about the track.
I did ask Warren about that. It does do hairpin turns, but he was very conscientious. And Brian, you can probably comment to it. But he said it was pretty muddy and greasy because there's no frost in the ground now. And it was floating very good that it wasn't leaving.
It didn't dig in. Yeah. I mean, I think about the Lamar trails that day, but it was.
Okay. And then if somebody has a itch, they can trailer to a different park.
Correct, and there is a down deposit. I can't remember what the dollar amount is if you take it off site.
That's if you take it off site. Okay.
Correct, but then
but
you
can go. But that goes to them, not to us, right? Because we don't have a cost in this or what?
We want to be removed, so it's really the terms are between Pringle Nature Center and the Accessibility of Wisconsin. We just want to make sure from a liability, because it's most of our parks, the Bristol Woods Park, that we're covered on that. But yeah, that all the deposits and stuff will be handled between those two parks.
One other thing for parks, Public Market has bought 16-foot ramps, and one 16-foot ramp and one 12-foot ramp, I believe, and we told Kemper that they could use it for the auditorium for any of their rentals, because it is hard to haul stuff in and out of there. So we're going to leave them at Kemper Center when we're not there for their use.
I'll take you up on that, because it's really hard to change a light bulb.
Okay.
So we have to bring in the lift and everything.
Yeah.
So that'd be really nice to have.
Yep.
Thank you.
Take the change of light bulb. The light bulb's not on.
So, you know, along with that accessibility for the parks and the trails and stuff, recently through some travels, got down to Florida and even saw them last year on the beach. They actually have like a mesh that gets. It's like a carpet that rolls out on the beach, and that there's spikes every so often, as opposed to doing like a crushed aggregate trail or wood chips or something like that. It might be something in certain areas. Maybe it's not used everywhere, but to do this instead of being more disruptive of coring things out or bringing new material in or doing something like that, which would provide potentially in the soggier parts of the year, maybe it's a better surface to go off of too. So I don't know if you've looked into it. You're shaking your head like maybe you know what I'm talking about. But
we've looked into that. One product's called Bovi Mats, and they're more specifically for beachfront areas to create that accessibility for people in wheelchairs. So there's Silver Lake Park and that beach is pretty narrow, so it didn't make much sense to have that type of accessibility. But yeah, same thing on a construction standpoint, that when we do new trails, we just put in like more of a geogrid type of, and it could be a small little type of matting in order to limit how much we actually have to disturb underneath. So you have to skim off the, you know, the topsoil per se. We don't have to really worry about that base course. So we've done similar products like that, so we minimally disturb new trail design.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I don't know the cost or anything like that, but I saw it and I'm like, you know, this is a, seems like a good thing to do to provide some accessibility.
Yeah. If you have any links or anything else for me to look at specific products.
Okay, I took a picture, so I can
send it. I'll take it.
Shelly, doesn't the city of Kenosha have those?
Yes, beaches? There are some down on Simmons Island.
Yeah, I remember seeing the, like, the roll, they just roll them out, and then do they bring them in every day, or?
No, they are stay out. The ones that go straight to the water are the problem sources. The waves come in, they can get eroded underneath, so those are the ones that get wrapped up, depending on the use, depending on the weather, those could be in or out. So most of it is in, but there's extensions that could happen.
Interesting.
Okay. Any other questions for Matt? Matt, do you have anything else to add?
I think I'm good.
Good. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Then next we'll go to Director Billingsley.
Yes, so I don't know if you want to start out with the resolution.
Sure,
first.
We can start out there.
Okay, so the resolution is to lease the Kenosha County property at the Kenosha County Center to U.S. Congressman Style. I know that I have asked John Moyer to be in attendance as he has worked with the request, and if there's any questions, I'm sure we can.
Okay.
I don't really have a question. I have a comment. Commentary, since we are talking about taxpayer dollar and we are talking about state and federal funds that will be paying for this area, I would have liked to have seen a greater square cost per square foot than $3, because if any of our representatives needed an office and had to go to a private industry, they'd be paying well more, and I'd like to just make sure that whoever, whether it's, you know, Congresswoman Baldwin or Style or Johnson, whoever it is, that they pay market rate. I will approve this resolution as is, but I think it's something to look at for next year on what is market rate for the facility. So since it is taxpayer money. Thank you.
Let's hear what our corporate counsel has to say.
I'm not sure. Not sure if there's, you know, certain questions on it, but we were approached, and we do have space available here in this building. It's 120 square feet. My understanding of the office use is it would be twice a week or by appointment there would be someone there. And it would facilitate communication between constituents and the representative. So it's basically a convenience. The idea is a convenience thing to have a one-stop location to talk to the representative here. Lease would go from January 2nd of this year to 2025, so a two-year lease term. The $350 a month, that where did that come from? I'm not really sure. I didn't set it, but that was what I was told it was, and so that's what's in there. It would be prorated if there's a fraction of a month. There's termination available after 30 days if it's written, a request for termination. So there is
either
that
party.
Out without
either penalty. Party?
Yes, no penalty involved. And we'd be providing electricity, public Wi-Fi, building access. My understanding, there is no landline involved in terms of a phone. Payment is due at the end of the month. From a legal standpoint, there's no problem with leasing space. I know there are concerns about, we want to be impartial. We want to make sure there's no campaigning and no partisan political activity coming out of the office, and that's the law and the rule on this, and there's a couple of sources for that. The House of Representatives Rules of Ethics and the House of Representatives Administrative Handbooks, some federal laws implicated here. So the idea is that there's not going to be partisan political activity here in this location. That has to be done on, you know, a private time and private space. So that would not be happening. We have to be uniform so that if we do get an application from another person, perhaps across the aisle or some other group, we have to, you know, analyze that and if there's space available, be fair and transparent and straightforward with it. So that's it in a nutshell. I don't know if people have other questions, but that's...
I just have one other comment here. I think it's a really great opportunity for constituents, especially in the west end of the county, to have access to their representatives. So I think this is a good thing for the county building to offer that, because I know that it will be provided on a nonpartisan basis. So I just want to reiterate, I think it's great that there's outreach from our representatives at the county building.
Any other questions?
I'm very supportive of this. I would love to see more of our elected officials do this. I don't care what party they're from. I would like to be able to walk in their office and talk with them, so that or with their representatives. So I support this.
Okay. I did have some questions come to me, I know some of these are I can answer, but we don't use the building as a polling location currently, as far as I know. So we're not worried about that portion of whether that, you know, name can even be on the door if they're in that election. Campaigning, though, there's a very specific definition of what campaigning is. They can put up their signs and they can talk to people while they're inside. They just can't be outside their door saying they vote for me or...
Right, I don't think there can be any partisan...
My name is Susie Liston. I'm the district director for Texas File. And as an employee of the U.S. House of Representatives, each staff member and a member of Congress have to go through annual ethics training, and it's by federal law. So there has to be a clear separation of official duties, which is providing constituent services, helping people in federal agencies, taking opinions, and campaigning. And there can be absolutely no campaign activity. So you cannot use government, taxpayer, computers, telephone, any conversation about any type of campaign activity, how to vote, like a political commercial, for example, you can't give commentary. We have to refer everything to a campaign office. So it's a very, very clear, concise separation line. So I'll say, for example, somebody calls and says, I don't like Brian's commercial. We have to say, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to discuss that under federal law, but here's the telephone number for the campaign office, and you can talk to them about that. So there's no signage or anything like that allowed.
Strictly informational.
It's strictly constituent services.
And ask about anything in particular, except for, you know, give me a sign, the yard sign. They can't do that.
No, can't even do that. So there's nothing with that.
Thank you.
It's supposed to be just informational. If you have a question, you have a concern, it's a way to get to that representative.
Yeah. Is it not similar to the listening session you just had here on Friday, right? That was a constituent. He was using our facilities to communicate with the residents. So it's that type of work that he's doing as our elected official.
Doesn't he have an office at the Racine Courthouse?
Yes.
It used to be in Summers, but now they're coming out here. But I mean, if they're in the courthouse, this is just another county government building. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Any other questions, concerns, issues? Okay, do I have a...
Quick question. You had mentioned constituent services. What does that entail specifically, other than the obvious?
Oh, sure. So, well, as you may know, the federal government is not the most responsive. So if you are having a problem with Social Security Administration, let's say you're applying for disability, you're caught up in the system, you been on hold for 5 hours on the 800 line, can't get through. The congressman, one of his main duties is to kind of serve as a liaison with that federal agency. So the constituents on the Privacy Act, police form under federal privacy laws, and the member of Congress can submit an inquiry, and then we try to cut through the red tape of bureaucracy and try to get that problem resolved. And so, whether it be like the IRS, Social Security, the VA, Postal Service, so basically every federal agency we can assist with. And then another thing too, if people have suggestions about a bill or how the government is working, you know, we can share that with the congressman. But yeah, last year we helped over, it was 2,000 cases that we had assisted people in trying to get things resolved.
Yeah, just looking through the lease, my question is how many, I'm assuming he's getting one office, 120 square feet, is what I saw in here, at this building. How many of these types of spaces, offices, does the county have? And then how are those made available? How are those, if another elected official wants to do the same thing, what's the process for them to lease space from Kenosha County?
I think it would be similar to what happened here, although I will say that we are working on, and I think long overdue, a building use policy that we're working on, because we need to do that adopt a uniform policy, and I think that will give us a clear out to the public, you know, policy that we would follow in a situation like that. As long as we have the space, and we go through the proper vetting and analysis, then I think we could, you know, consider leasing space, you know, in a building like this to another representative, or with that building use policy, we'd be able to spell that out and have it be very clear.
My understanding was there aren't any offices at our downtown facility, but there are three offices here.
Do we have offices like at the old job center or any of the other county buildings as well that are available, or is it just those two locations right now?
We just I know of the location here. I'm not sure at the job center. It certainly is something I can look into.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Go ahead. John, when is that building use policy supposed to be finalized?
Well,
the process of doing that.
Yes, we're currently working on that. So I'm not directly involved in that. I think Joe Cardamone is working on it. So hopefully we'll be able to have, you know, at least a draft of that coming up soon. Maybe Shelley has a better idea. I don't know what the timeline is.
I know we had submitted a draft back and forth on building use as far as external reservations coming in. Since this has now added leases, we're doing some modifications to that. So I would say we're coming back and forth, and now I have to add some lease language, so maybe in the next month or so we might have something. I mean, it's probably 60% written.
Is it going to have to go to legislative and finance?
Yeah.
Because it's a public works.
It's a policy, so I think
it's a policy.
Right.
I think you're going to go legislative.
I would think so.
And then I would think finance would probably have to be involved. And then we would be open to that and get to leases at that point.
I think you're right, yeah.
Okay.
But hopefully we'll have something. And in answer to your question, hopefully, you know, within the next month or two, we'll have a draft at least to start.
Okay, thank you.
Looking at.
Cool. Any other questions? Seeing no more questions.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion to approve by Supervisor Belsky, a second by Supervisor Scott. Any other discussion? Seeing no more discussion. Youth and governance, how do you vote on approving or not to cease?
Aye.
Okay, the rest of the committee, how do you vote on lease?
Aye.
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 No nays, so we have approved the lease. And Shelley?
I'm passing around the sign-in sheets as we talk.
We are working a lot on the bonding, our CIP projects and scheduling, as we're trying to do with plumbing, taking a look at our paving projects. We're hoping to have kind of a rough idea of schedule of majority of those projects in the next couple months, as far as ballpark estimates. We have had some discussions internally as to upcoming projects, upcoming priorities for the next budget season and CIP sessions. So if there are any additions or concerns you have, please let me know, and we can certainly look at those in the upcoming CIPs.
It's mine.
Any other matters appropriately brought before the committee? Of course, nothing can be voted on, but we brought up. Pleasure, Carol.
I've just got one. And this is more of a technical thing, but it touches facilities, highways, and whatever buildings that we got going on. I was recently at the Wisconsin Ready Mix Association conference and talking with some folks that pour a lot of concrete in the area, and they're noticing this year that their 30-day breaks, that they've missed 30-day breaks more this year, 28-day breaks this year than any other prior year. And what happened last year coming into this year was a fundamental shift in the makeup of the of Portland cement. So the mix designs are now different. So they have now incorporated up to 15% lime dust into the cement, and which replaces Portland cement concrete. So I think that there may be some whatever projects we have ongoing, and this is a state DOT concern as well, is that your mix designs are going to be different because the 100% Portland cement mix designs are no longer available. They just because it's all switching over to this 15 or some sort of percentage of lime and dust. But what they are finding is the 28 day breaks are missing. But when they go to the 54 days, and when they go to the later breaks, that they're far exceeding what they need them to be. But
just a little definition on the breaks for us who are not in.
Okay, so one of the measures of quality of concrete is determined based on the strength. So it's if you want a 4,500 psi concrete or 5,000 psi concrete, you have a certain mix design, and between all the different admixtures and aggregates and cement mixture that you come up with a design that will meet that standard. The way to test that standard is to pour, as they're doing the pours, you collect cylinders and you make them, and then you send them to a lab and you have a break. And most of the time, right, yeah, so you build
does
like
that
a,
include bug holes?
It does, yeah, actually. Yeah,
I mean, you like to get into that one more time.
But what they do then is they send the cylinders to a lab, they have a hydraulic press that presses it, it measures the break. They usually do them, you know, a quick one would be 3 days, but normally it's a 7 day break. So like they'll pour the cylinders on here, after 7 days they'll do a break to see what the strength is, see that it's developing the strength. And usually the standard for decades has been at 28 days that you need a certain strength, that you need that 4,000, 4,500, 5,000 PSI strength. But what's happening now is that they're failing. They're not quite meeting those strengths at 28 days. But when they do the breaks later and they give it more cure time, that it's really breaking a lot stronger than it's designed to be. So what that does, though, is if you have a performance specification that says, hey, we can break, you know, you're going to get a 5,000 PSI mix at 28 days, well, you might be at 4,500 PSI. Well, then that would be a rejection and a fail. But if you wait and you break, you know, I'm just saying, whenever you start to get into construction projects, whether it's highways, buildings, pay attention and start asking questions about concrete designs. Because, you know, I don't want to see us get, you know, all of a sudden run into a situation where you fail a bunch of concrete and then you have to start talking to all these other people about what's going on. So
one thing that Supervisor Thomas and I have talked about, and I think it's more golf than parks when you guys are sitting together, is what more programs can we put together for more of the urban youth? I know most of our parks are out here and not down there, but I know there's different golf programs for children and all that. And
just something to keep in the back of your head. We're not looking for answers today or next month or anything. But something that maybe other communities are doing or anything to try to get more more involved. I mean, it only helps golf by getting more golfers, and it only helps our parks by getting more people to utilize the parks. So you know, we'll spend a lot of money on it. We'll see how many people can utilize it. Yeah. Any other questions? Seeing none. Paul, sorry, Jim, you did have a question.
I just had one comment. I made this announcement at the Finance Committee, but in the middle of this year, I'll be retiring, and the Finance Department has already selected a replacement for me. And if he's...
That's
he's,
not true.
He's just ashamed of himself, so he has his mask on. So, Chris, you guys have seen Chris hanging around.
He's just trying to hide a big smile.
5 years? Yeah. 5 years.
Seven.
Yeah, seven. I'm not doing it down like so. Anyway, when it comes to the knowledge of the financial systems within the county, he knows as much as any financial person does. Period. So you're a good hands with that, and we've been training him off and on, so he knows how to do the budget. So I feel real confident that he can. He's got a county degree, went to Whitewater. Eagle Scout, or you name it, star athlete, all that other stuff. So,
are you going to be full-time babysitter now? Grandkids sitter?
Oh, God. You and I have talked about this.
I know.
Yeah, and then Nick Ruth will take, Nick's worked at the courthouse in their finance department.
Okay.
So he's going to take Chris's job. Chris takes my job. I'll be here off and on for 6 months. And trying to complete a bunch of projects. There's the job center project and other things that they've asked me to kind of hang around and do. But if you have, you can still come to me with stuff, but it's better, I think, if everyone goes to Chris. Shelley's doing a real good job. Chris comes to everything that I, almost everything that I do, except when we're talking about him. So I'm just kidding. I want y'all to know that. That's why he's here. And
you set up the microphones, so you might want to look for one of those.
Right? Yeah, right.
So, okay. Congratulations to Chris. Promoting from the interior in the county is a great time.
Yes, it is.
There you go. There you go. Okay, unless there's any other...
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, moved by Supervisor O'Day, second by Supervisor Stock to adjourn. Youth and Governance, have a vote.
Aye.
And then the rest of the
table. Aye.